Hello, and welcome to Mr. Doom, and welcome to another episode of Scary Stories. My name's Chris, and this happened when I was 8 years old. I've never told anyone this story, not my family, not my friends, because for the longest time, I thought no one would believe me. But even now, decades later, I still can't forget those nights. I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania, in a house my parents rented on the edge of a quiet neighborhood. It wasn't a big house, just 3 bedrooms and a single bathroom, but it felt enormous to me at the time. My bedroom was at the end of the hall, right next to the attic door, and I remember always feeling a little uneasy in that room. At first it was just a feeling, you know, that sense that someone's watching you, even when you're alone. But as time went on, it became something more. It started with the noises. They weren't loud, just faint creaks and whispers, barely audible over the hum of the house settling at night. At first, I thought it was my imagination, or maybe just the wind. But the more I listened, the more I realized the sounds were coming from the same place, my closet. My closet was one of those old-fashioned ones with a single wooden door that never quite closed all the way. It always seemed to have a sliver of darkness visible, no matter how many times I pushed it shut. The noises would start just after I went to bed. I'd lie there in the dark, staring at the ceiling, and hear them. Soft, shuffling movements, like someone shifting their weight inside the closet. I told my parents about it, of course. My mom brushed it off, saying it was probably just the house creaking, and my dad joked that it was the boogeyman coming to tuck me in. Neither of them took me seriously. One night, I decided to prove to myself that it was nothing. I waited until the house was quiet, until I could hear my parents snoring down the hall, and then I turned on my bedside lamp and got out of bed. The closet door was slightly ajar, as always. My heart was pounding as I stepped closer, the floorboards creaking under my bare feet. "Hello?" I whispered, my voice trembling. No answer. I reached out, my hand shaking, and pulled the door open. The closet was empty, just my clothes hanging neatly on their hangers, a few toys scattered on the floor. I let out a breath I hadn't realized I was holding, and closed the door as tightly as I could. For a while, that seemed to work. I started sleeping with my lamp on, and the noises stopped. I thought maybe I'd imagined the whole thing. But then, a few weeks later, it started again. This time, it was louder, more distinct. It wasn't just shuffling anymore. It was breathing. Slow, shallow breaths, just loud enough to hear if I held my own breath and listened closely. I was too scared to open the door again. I started sleeping with my blanket pulled over my head, my back to the closet. I figured if I couldn't see it, it couldn't see me. One night, though, I woke up to something that made my blood run cold. The closet door was open, not just a crack, like it usually was, but wide open, as if someone had pushed it from the inside. I stared at it, frozen in place. The light from my lamp cast long shadows across the room, and for a moment, I thought I saw something move, just a flicker of motion, deep in the darkness of the closet. I wanted to scream, to run to my parents' room, but I couldn't move. I could only lie there, staring into the blackness, until I finally fell asleep out of sheer exhaustion. The next morning, I told my mom what had happened. She sighed and told me I needed to stop reading scary stories before bed. "You're scaring yourself," she said, ruffling my hair. But I wasn't. I knew I wasn't. That night, I decided to stay awake. I turned off my lamp, pulled my blanket up to my chin, and stared at the closet, determined to catch whatever it was that kept opening the door. At first, nothing happened. The house was silent except for the occasional creak of the floorboards and the distant hum of the refrigerator in the kitchen. But then, around midnight, I heard it, the breathing. It was faint at first, barely audible, but it grew louder, more distinct, until it was unmistakable. And then, slowly, the closet door began to creak open. I wanted to run, to scream, but I couldn't move. I could only watch as the door opened wider and wider until it revealed a figure standing in the shadows. It was a man. He was tall and thin, his face pale and gaunt, with dark eyes that seemed to glint in the dim light. He didn't say anything. He just stood there, staring at me. And then he smiled. That was enough to break my paralysis. I bolted out of bed, screaming for my parents. They came running, flipping on the lights, but by the time they got to my room, the closet was empty. I sobbed, trying to tell them what I'd seen, but they didn't believe me. My dad opened the closet, pulling out clothes and toys to show me there was nothing there. But I knew what I'd seen. We moved out of that house a few months later. My dad got a new job in a different city, and we left without ever figuring out what was in that closet. For years, I tried to convince myself it had been a nightmare, a trick of the light. But last month, I visited my old neighborhood and ran into one of the new owners of the house. We got to talking, and I asked them how they liked the place. They hesitated, glancing at their young daughter, who was playing nearby, before lowering their voice. "She's been having trouble sleeping," they said. "Keep saying there's a man in her closet." My name is Claire, and I've never been one to believe in ghost stories or anything supernatural. I was always the skeptic in my group of friends, the one who laughed off creepy stories and rolled my eyes at haunted house tours. But after what happened last fall, I'm not so sure anymore. It was October, and I had just moved into a small rental house in a quiet neighborhood. It was a cozy little place with a picket fence, big windows, and a garden that had been neglected for years. The house wasn't perfect, but I was thrilled to have a space of my own after years of living in apartments. The first few weeks went by uneventfully. I spent my time unpacking, decorating, and settling into my new routine. The neighbors were friendly, the street was quiet, and I loved waking up to the sunlight streaming through the big front windows. But then, one evening, something strange happened. I had just finished dinner and was sitting on the couch, scrolling through my phone, when I felt it, a cold draft. It came out of nowhere, chilling me to the bone. I got up to check the windows, thinking one of them might be open, but they were all closed and locked. I shrugged it off, thinking the house might have some drafts I hadn't noticed before, and went about my evening. Later that night, as I was getting ready for bed, I heard a faint sound, like a soft tapping. It was coming from the front window. I froze, my toothbrush still in my hand, and listened. The tapping came again, steady and deliberate. At first, I thought it might be the wind, or maybe a branch brushing against the glass, but when I peeked through the blinds, my stomach dropped. There was a woman standing outside. She was just a few feet away, staring into the house. She was pale, with dark hair that hung in damp strands around her face, and she was wearing what looked like an old-fashioned white dress, her eyes locked onto mine, and for a moment, I couldn't move. Then she smiled. It wasn't a friendly smile. It was cold, almost predatory. I stumbled back, my heart pounding, and grabbed my phone to call the police. By the time they arrived, the woman was gone. The officers searched the yard and the street but found no sign of her. They told me it was probably just a prank or a neighbor playing a joke. For the next few days, I couldn't stop thinking about her. Every time I passed the front window, I felt a twinge of unease, like she might still be out there, watching. Then, a few nights later, it happened again. I woke up around 2 a.m. to the sound of tapping. This time it was coming from my bedroom window. I didn't want to look, but I couldn't stop myself. Slowly I pulled back the curtain. She was there. Her face was pressed against the glass, her dark eyes staring straight at me. Her smile was wider this time, almost unnatural, and her breath fogged up the window. I screamed and ran out of the room, locking myself in the bathroom. I called the police again, but by the time they arrived, she was gone. The next morning, I decided to do some digging. I went to the library and started looking into the history of the house. It didn't take long to find something. About 20 years ago, a woman named Eleanor had lived there. She was a recluse, rarely seen by her neighbors, and she died under mysterious circumstances. Her body was found in the garden, and though the official cause of death was listed as a heart attack, rumors swirled that she had been different. I didn't know what to believe. but I couldn't shake the feeling that the woman I'd seen was somehow connected to her. That night, I decided to stay awake and see if she would come back. I set up a chair in the living room, facing the front window, and waited. Around 3 a.m., the tapping started again. My heart was pounding as I stood up and walked toward the window. I pulled back the curtain, expecting to see her face, but the yard was empty. Then I heard it, a whisper, so soft I almost didn't catch it. "Let me in." I spun around, but no one was there. The room was empty. "Let me in," the voice came again, this time louder. It was coming from behind me. I turned back to the window, and there she was. She was inside. She stood just a few feet away, her head tilted to the side, that horrible smile still on her face. I stumbled backward, tripping over the coffee table, and scrambled to my feet. "Get out!" I screamed. She didn't move. I grabbed my phone and dialed 911, but before the call connected, she was gone. The police didn't find any signs of forced entry, and they didn't seem to believe me when I told them what had happened. They suggested I might be imagining things, maybe from stress or lack of sleep. But I know what I saw. I moved out of that house a week later. I couldn't stay there. Not after what happened. My name is Brian, and this happened during my sophomore year of college. I went to a small university in the Midwest, where most of the dorm buildings were older than my grandparents. They had their charm, I guess. High ceilings, creaky wooden floors, but they also had a certain eeriness to them, especially at night. That year, I was assigned a single room in the oldest dorm on campus. At first, I was thrilled. No roommate meant no one to deal with late-night noise or dirty dishes. The room itself was small, just a bed, a desk, and a wardrobe, but it felt like a little slice of freedom. I moved in at the start of the fall semester, and everything seemed fine for the first few weeks. Classes were busy, the campus was alive with activity, and I was finally settling into a routine. But then, things started to happen. It was subtle at first, just little things I brushed off. I'd wake up in the morning and find my desk chair pulled out, even though I always pushed it in before bed. Or my closet door would be open, even though I distinctly remembered closing it. I figured I was just tired or distracted. College life can do that to you. But one night, about a month into the semester, I woke up suddenly. I wasn't sure what had woken me at first. The room was dark, and everything was quiet, except for the faint hum of the radiator. I was about to roll over and go back to sleep when I noticed something. There was a figure standing at the foot of my bed. My heart leapt into my throat. I blinked, thinking my eyes were playing tricks on me, but it didn't move. It was just standing there, a dark, shadowy figure with no distinct features, silhouetted against the faint glow of the streetlight outside my window. I sat up quickly, fumbling for the light on my nightstand, but as soon as I turned it on, the figure was gone. I told myself it was just a dream, some half-awake hallucination, and eventually managed to fall back asleep. But it happened again, and again. Almost every night, I'd wake up to see the figure standing there, always at the foot of my bed, always still and silent. No matter how quickly I turned on the light, it would vanish the moment the room was illuminated. I started dreading bedtime. I'd stay up late studying in the library or hanging out in the common room, anything to avoid going back to that room. But eventually, I'd have to sleep, and the figure would be there, waiting. I told a few friends about it, hoping they'd have a rational explanation, but most of them just laughed it off. "It's probably just stress," one of them said. "Midterms are coming up. You're probably imagining things." But I wasn't. One night, I decided to stay awake and see what would happen. I sat on my bed with the light on, my back against the wall, staring at the foot of the bed. Hours passed, and nothing happened. Finally, I decided to turn off the light and try to sleep. I don't know how long I was out, but I woke up to the feeling of pressure on my chest. I opened my eyes, and the figure was closer this time. It was leaning over me. I couldn't move. I couldn't scream. I could only stare as the shadow loomed over me, its featureless face inches from mine. And then, just like that, it was gone. The next morning, I couldn't take it anymore. I went to the dorm's resident advisor and told her what had been happening. She gave me a strange look and asked, "What room are you in?" 206, I said. Her face paled. She hesitated for a moment, then said, "There's a story about that room." Apparently, a few years before I arrived, a student had died in my room. His name was Kyle, and he'd been struggling with depression. One night, he'd locked himself in the room and taken his own life. The RA assured me the university had cleaned and renovated the room before reassigning it to students, but the thought of what had happened there sent chills down my spine. That night, I did something I hadn't done in years. I prayed. I asked Kyle, or whatever was in that room, to leave me alone. I told him I was sorry for what had happened to him, that I hoped he'd find peace. For a while, it seemed to work. The figure stopped appearing, and I started sleeping through the night again. But then, about a week later, I woke up to something even worse. My desk chair was pulled out, as usual. But this time, there was something on the desk. A single piece of paper, folded neatly in half. I opened it, my hands shaking, and saw four words scrawled in messy handwriting. "You're in my room." I moved out the next day. To this day, I don't know what I saw or how to explain it. Maybe it was my imagination, or maybe Kyle really was still there, tied to that room. All I know is that I'll never set foot in that dorm again. And sometimes, late at night, I still feel like someone is watching me. My name is Daniel, and this happened about 5 years ago. I was on a work trip to a small coastal town in Maine, a quiet, misty place where the streets seemed to empty after sundown. My company had booked me a room at a quaint little inn called the Briarwood. It was an old building with a lot of charm. Creaky wooden floors, antique furniture, and the faint smell of salt water in the air. I arrived late in the evening, just as the fog rolled in from the harbor. The woman at the front desk, an older lady with kind eyes, handed me a brass key and directed me to room 14 on the second floor. "You'll like this room," she said, though there was a strange hesitation in her voice. "It's cozy." The room was exactly as she described, small but charming. There was a four-poster bed with a heavy quilt, a small desk by the window, and an armchair in the corner. A large mirror hung on the wall opposite the bed, its edges tarnished with age. After a long day of travel, I was looking forward to a good night's sleep. I unpacked a few things, took a quick shower, and climbed into bed. The inn was quiet except for the occasional creak of the floorboards, or the distant murmur of voices from the lobby. Sometime in the middle of the night, I woke up. At first, I wasn't sure what had woken me. The room was dark, save for the faint glow of the streetlight outside. I lay there for a moment, listening to the silence, when I heard it. Crying. It was soft at first, barely more than a whisper, but it grew louder as I listened. It was the sound of a woman sobbing. Deep, wrenching cries that seemed to echo through the walls. I sat up in bed, my heart pounding. The sound seemed to be coming from the hallway, just outside my door. I glanced at the clock on the nightstand. 3:14 a.m. I got up, walked to the door, and opened it just a crack. The hallway was empty, lit only by a dim sconce at the far end. The crying had stopped. Feeling unsettled but exhausted, I went back to bed and managed to fall asleep. The next night, it happened again. This time, the sobbing started earlier, around midnight. It was louder than before, and it didn't seem to be coming from the hallway. It was inside the room. I turned on the bedside lamp, my eyes scanning the small space. Nothing looked out of place, but the crying continued, muffled yet unmistakable. "Hello?" I called out, my voice shaking. The crying stopped. I got up and checked the room, behind the curtains, under the bed, even inside the wardrobe. But I found nothing. By now, I was starting to feel genuinely scared. I tried to convince myself it was just the old building playing tricks on me, maybe noises carrying through the pipes or the walls. But deep down, I knew it wasn't that. The next morning, I went down to the lobby and asked the woman at the front desk about the noise. "Do you ever hear crying at night?" I asked, trying to sound casual. She froze, her expression tightening for just a moment before she forced a polite smile. "No, I can't say I have," she said quickly. "It's an old building, probably just the wind." I could tell she was lying, but I didn't press her. That night, I decided to stay awake and see if the crying would start again. I sat in the armchair with the lamp on, a book in my lap, but I couldn't focus. Every creak of the floorboards made me jump. Every whisper of the wind set my nerves on edge. Around 1 a.m., the sobbing began. It was louder than ever, filling the room with a raw, gut-wrenching grief that made my chest tighten. I stood up, the hair on the back of my neck standing on end, and turned toward the mirror. That's when I saw her. There was a woman standing behind me in the reflection, her face pale and tear-streaked, her dark hair hanging limply around her shoulders. She wore an old-fashioned dress, the kind you'd see in black-and-white photographs, and her eyes were wide with sorrow. I spun around, but the room was empty. When I looked back at the mirror, she was gone. I didn't sleep that night. The next morning, I asked the front desk woman directly, "Who's the woman?" I said, my voice firmer than I felt. She hesitated, then sighed. "You're not the first guest to ask about her," she admitted. "Years ago, a young woman named Eleanor stayed in that room. She was waiting for her fiancé, a sailor who never returned from the sea. She took her own life in the room, and ever since then, guests have reported hearing her cries." I felt a chill run down my spine. "I'll move you to another room if you'd like," she offered. I agreed immediately and spent my last night in a different room. But the story doesn't end there. When I got home, I unpacked my suitcase and found something I couldn't explain. Tucked between my clothes was an old, water-stained photograph of a young woman in a white dress. She was standing by the sea, her eyes filled with sadness. Scrawled on the back were three words: "Why didn't you?" To this day, I don't know how the photo got there or what it meant. But sometimes, late at night, I still hear the faint sound of crying, and I wonder if Eleanor is still waiting for someone or something that will never come.